This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Welcome to the Sword and Laser episode number 71. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And we have both finished A Dance with Dragons.
Oh, I did it in a binge.
I did it
probably the last 40% of the book in 2 days.
I did the last 30% of the book on Saturday.
I just took not this past weekend, but the weekend before last and just plowed through. I was caught up, I'll be honest.
Yeah, it took me about 5 hours to get through that 30%.
So we should probably do the wrap up at the end of the show so that we can be spoilery.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So yeah. We will first get to the quick burns. So there's been a lot of lists going around this week. I don't know why. It's not the end of the year. I'm not sure why this is happening now.
It's just a weird mid-year list wave.
Apparently, or maybe sci-fi fantasy is the hot thing right now, so people are trying to capitalize on it.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
It's total posers. We don't ever read this stuff.
Well, last week, NPR did a list of your picks. That's listeners to NPR of the top 100 science fiction and fantasy books. They lumped both genres in together, which is good and bad, I think. There's something to be said for keeping them separate and kind of having them their own lists, perhaps. Yeah.
The lines get blurry, but yeah, I mean, sometimes it's, you know, space battles versus kings and swords.
I suppose you're right.
I mean, I guess it's swords and lasers.
I had to defend NPR a few times on Twitter, actually, because people were like, how could they leave off this? Or how could they forget about that? I'm like, this was a listener list. This was people voting. This was not their editorial choices.
Plus, there's only 100 slots. They're going to leave off somebody's favorite.
But pretty much all the classics are here. I mean, they've got Lord of the Rings in the number one spot, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, number two.
Book of the New Sun is even on there.
Yeah, which I thought was really great. And I was happy that I have read most of them. I would say probably 70%. That's not most, but
I've read a lot of them.
I didn't do the actual
Some of them I haven't finished the whole series.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of good stuff on here. The Dark Tower series was on there. I did not fail to notice.
Finished the Dark Tower. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. I'm caught up on the Sword and Laser pick, right? I finished Dance with Dragons, and I finished the whole darn Death March of the Dark Tower series.
Nice.
Which honestly, that makes it sound like I didn't enjoy it. I loved it.
It was worth every moment.
It really was. And a friend of mine was asking today, if I'm going to read the Dark Tower series, do I need to read all the side novels like Salem's Lot, Black House, all of that stuff? And I said, no, it is enjoyable to do it that way. So, you know, and there's a good order to read them in. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, if that's your reason for not continuing to read the Dark Tower, just read the Dark Tower series because it makes perfect sense without having read those other books. That's just if you really want to like milk every last bit of enjoyment out of it.
And I have to say, I'm pretty proud of us because there are a ton of Sword and Laser picks on here. I mean, the Forever War is on here, World War Z, Snow Crash, Ender's Game, Child. Did we read Childhood's End?
Yes.
Yes, Childhood's End.
That was one
End.
Of the really early picks.
Totally.
In fact, did that even predate the podcast? No. Mm, no.
I don't know. Mists of Avalon is on here. So a lot of stuff that we've read, I feel like we are contributing to the overall well-roundedness of our audience and ourselves.
Well, you know what? I think it feeds on itself. I mean, the audience sort of pushed us to read some of these that are on here. And I think that, you know, it's a community effort. It takes a village.
It does indeed. And at number 18, The King Killer Chronicles, the whole first two books of the Patrick Rothfuss trilogy.
If I had to say, I can't believe this is not on here, I would say it's Philip Pullman, his Dark Materials.
You're not the first person to say that, actually.
That would be the first thing that came to my, like, wait a minute. It's not like I look at one of these and go, well, you should obviously kick this one off for his Dark Materials, but I would have rated it high, and it didn't even make the list.
Well, actually, maybe not surprisingly, or maybe surprisingly, it also did not make the top 100 sci-fi fantasy sword and laser picks. There was also a poll going on, a voting list on the Sword and Laser Listopia site. And while there's a lot of similar crossover, there are some differences. But also the Golden Compass and anything from Philip Pullman did not make our list either.
It wasn't even nominated?
Well, it's not in the top 100.
Oh, it's just not in the top 100.
Yeah, so I don't know where it is.
Crap.
So maybe we're the only ones liked that. I don't know.
The voting's not over yet, though, for our list on Goodreads.
Does it ever end?
No, I guess it doesn't. It just kind of stays forever. So this list, it's not over yet. That's all I'm saying.
There you go. There's still
time.
And
it never will be.
There's still time to make it. A lot of Tad Williams on our list. A lot of Stephen King and Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, I wonder why there's a lot of Tad Williams, Veronica. Stuff in the ballot box much?
What? I don't know what you're talking about. Actually, I voted for... what did I vote for? Oh, what's that book? Yeah, Josh made me vote for it, and I was totally in agreement with him. Oh, Kushiel's Dart, the Jacqueline Carey story from Kushiel's Legacy #1.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, we got to get this on the list. And I'm like, you're right. I love that series. And so I voted for it.
You got campaigned.
I voted for a lot of stuff. I voted for The Name of the Wind, The Blade Itself, Kushiel's Dart, Stormfront by Jim Butcher, Snow Crash, A Game of Thrones, Ender's Game, Lord of the Rings, Demon.
Lord of the Rings, number one on the NPR list we were talking about, and number one on our Goodreads list.
Yeah, go figure. The Belgariad, Volume 1, Assassin's Apprentice by Robin Hobb.
That's one we should read, The Belgariad.
Yeah, I love those books. They are fantastic.
I know, it's another series.
It's another massive series. It is so long. I don't know if we can do that to our readers so soon after going through George R. R. Martin.
But this is a great resource for going back and picking up some classics.
Oh, totally.
That we haven't read yet.
Yeah, and if you just want to see what other people are reading too, if you want an opportunity to add some things to your list on Goodreads, now would be the time, because pretty much all the greats are on this one list right here.
The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde, number 32 on the Sword and Laser list right now. How literate of
our people. Audience. Seven people voted for that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
That's all it took.
If that's
people?
All it takes to get something up there that high on the list.
Something could rock it up on this list right now. Get out there and vote. Get out the vote.
39 people have voted for The Lord of the Rings. So that's the big one so far.
I hadn't voted for The Gunslinger.
Now is your chance, Tom.
Yes.
It's only a click away.
Exactly. So, yeah, our list is, especially when you get down towards 100, it starts to be a little weird. Not weird in a bad way, just, you know, it's probably not what you'd expect because we haven't got a critical mass of people voting on it yet.
Well, I think you're probably right. I mean,
I think that first five or six are pretty solid and probably won't change much. But after that,
still good stuff, though. We've got Lewis Carroll and Larry Niven and Carl Sagan and Ursula Le Guin. This one I wanted to read from Mira Grant Feed, which is Newsflash #1. I added that to my to-read list a while ago. Anyway, there's other stuff going on in the world, though, Tom. Why don't you tell us about how to write an adventure novel?
Yeah, in 3 days.
In 3 days.
3 days. Yeah. No, this is just a fascinating read from Michael Moorcock's blog. Of course, I found it on Boing Boing. Cory Doctorow was writing it up, but he wrote up his formula for back when he was writing the Elric series. And he would write a novel every 3 to 10 days.
What?
He was just cranking them out. And anybody who's interested in writing should absolutely read this. But even if you're not, if you're just interested in the process of like how this stuff comes together, he basically said, look, I took a formula, but here's how I made sure that it didn't come off as formulaic. So it's all quest formula. The same thing you would see in a Holy Grail story or the Maltese Falcon he uses as an example, where, you know, there's a bunch of people after the same thing. And then there's a hero who's up against, you know, superhuman forces, whether it's big business, politics, supernatural evil, whatever. Mm-hmm. He said there is an event every four pages. There is a complete structure, not necessarily a plot. You can make that up as you go along, but a structure that you know where you're going and you know what you have to write. And he said he used a list of images that were purely fantastic to kind of feed him. And even he would sometimes just look around his room. And he'd be like, I need something here. And he'd see his mirror. He'd be like, okay, a mirror that eats your soul. Got it.
You know, this is really cool, but it also really takes the magic out of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
it's demystifying the whole thing. And I like
it demystifies the process a little bit, but it's still, you're right. I mean, it's showing the gears, showing how the sausage is made.
How the sausage gets made. My favorite/least favorite metaphor.
Yeah. But sausage is still tasty, mm-hmm. even how it's made. Mm-hmm. I just ate one.
Did you?
Yeah, before we started recording.
That's what she said.
That
probably. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Inappropriate.
Well, HR! Anyway. This is laser HR department.
So yeah, like we have that. We definitely have that. This is cool though. I would love to know how he would shrink it down for, say, a short story or something like that. Something that does you don't have room for every four pages something to be happening.
Yeah.
I guess you just kind of have to be.
This is one thing that I found really useful. The imagery comes before the action because the action's actually unimportant. Hmm. An object to be obtained, limited time to obtain it. It's easily developed once you work the structure out. So make sure that you're making it, making the imagery compelling. Because frankly, everybody knows where a story is going most of the time. Even stories where you're surprised a lot, like Dance with Dragons, we'll talk about later. You know, you kind of, it's the imagery that makes or break.
Yeah, totally. Very cool stuff. So I think it's time now for the calendar. And we've got the complete guide from IO9. But coming up on the 16th of this month, which is this week, The Omen Machine by Terry Goodkind. From the beginning, with Wizard's First Rule, Terry Goodkind set a new standard for epic storytelling. Now he returns with a powerful new tale from Richard and Colin's world. An accident leads to the discovery of a mysterious machine that has rested hidden deep underground for countless millennia. The machine awakens to begin issuing a series of increasingly alarming, if minor, omens. The omens turn out to be astonishingly accurate and ever more ominous. As Zed tries to figure out how to destroy the sinister device, the machine issues a cataclysmic omen involving Richard and Colin, foretelling an impending event beyond anyone's ability to stop. As catastrophe approaches, the machine then reveals that it is within its power to delay or withdraw the omen in exchange for an impossible demand.
What's the demand? I don't know, but I have good imagery.
Sounds kind of Machine of Deathy.
It does. A lot of people have been anticipating this book very highly because Terry Goodkind, he's pretty popular. He's got a big following. So this is one of the bigger releases we'll talk about. I wanted to point out, by the way, when you said we have the IO9 complete guide, that is that IO9 still does its complete guide that shows movie and TV and like every book release. But these are some notable releases that we're talking about.
We're not doing the whole list.
Yeah, this is not. In fact, not all of these are even on the IO9 complete guide. I'm just saying. I got my own sources. Also, August 16th, Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. It's the year 2044. And like most of humanity, Wade Watts escapes his grim surroundings by spending his waking hours jacked into the Oasis, which is all caps, a sprawling virtual utopia that lets you be anything you want, a place where you can live and play and fall in love with tens of thousands of planets. And like most of humanity, Wade dreams of being the one to discover the ultimate lottery ticket that lies concealed within this virtual world. So if you were thinking, yeah, another virtual world story, here's what makes it different. Somewhere inside the giant network playground, Oasis creator James Halliday hid a series of fiendish puzzles that will yield massive fortune and remarkable power to whoever can unlock them. Wade is as comfortable debating the finer points of John Hughes' oeuvre, playing Pac-Man, or reciting Devo lyrics as he is scrounging power to run his Oasis rig. And then he stumbles upon his first puzzle.
Ooh. Mm. Mm. And then on the 17th, we've got The Edinburgh Dead by Brian Ruckley. Am I pronouncing that right? I'm always scared I'm saying that word wrong.
Which one, Ruckley?
Edinburgh.
No, I think you said it right.
Edinburgh. And all history, Edinburgh in 1827, home to mad professors and crazed alchemists. The newly formed Edinburgh police force. Of course, they're going to make me say it like 50 times.
Wait, where does it take place?
Edinburgh. Oh, cue the hate mail. The Edinburgh police force has to investigate a series of murders and suspicious deaths. An interesting change in direction from the author of the brutal Godless World trilogy.
Love myself some old history. August 18th, By Light Alone from Adam Roberts. In a world where we have been genetically engineered so that we can photosynthesize sunlight with our hair.
Sweet!
Yes! Go, Adam Roberts. Hunger is a thing of the past. Food and indulgence. The poor grow their hair. The rich affect baldness and flaunt their wealth by still eating. But other hungers remain. The young daughter of an affluent New York family is kidnapped. Ransom demands are refused. Years later, a young woman arrives at the family home claiming to be their long-lost daughter. She has changed so much, she has lived on light. Can anyone be sure that she really has come home?
Ooh, I just added that to my to-read list.
As they finish the book.
Yes. Yes, Tom. Yes. And on the 23rd, The Measure of the Magic, Legends of Shannara by Terry Brooks. After more than three decades of captivating epic fantasy readers, the storytelling magic of New York Times bestselling author Terry Brooks' Shannara saga continues to enthrall. Now the fascinating chronicle of Shannara's prehistory reaches a thrilling new peak in the sequel to Bearers of the Black Staff.
I'm so glad you read that, because for some reason I was looking at it as Beavers of the Black Staff.
Beavers of the Black Staff.
This is a totally different book.
Totally different book. Totally.
Finally, August 23rd, The Power of Six, the next in the I Am Number Four by Pittacus Lore. This is the sequel to I Am Number Four. Nine of us came here, but sometimes I wonder if time has changed us, says the blurb. If we all still believe in our mission, how can I know there are six of us left? Basically, you know, if you saw the trailer for the movie or if you've read I Am Number Four, this is the next one. So if you're caught up in that series, you'll want to grab it.
Is that a young adult kind of series? I feel kind of like it's a young adult.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, you know, it's on the older end. Okay. But yeah.
Not that I have a problem with that. I'm just curious.
It's not tweeny or anything. No.
Gotcha. Well, now it's time for a break because, as you know, this podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you the chance to try out their service. Now, I wanted to recommend an off-genre pick.
What? How? Sword, not laser, nothing?
Neither sword nor laser. Wow. But I have to say, it is probably one of the best audiobooks I've ever listened to.
All right, then.
And some of the readers may scoff out there and laugh, but I've read tons of reviews about this audiobook, and men, women alike, young, old, have all found it to be totally endearing and really captivating. And it's The Help. I don't know if you've heard of the movie, The Help.
I have.
That has just come out.
Tell me more.
It's based on a book by Catherine Stockett, and the audiobook is just fantastic. It's got a full ensemble cast, so there's like four different people reading parts, and they do the voices really, really, really well. And I think I just kind of needed something a little bit different for a change, and I just on a whim picked it up based on the excellent reviews on audible.com, and I'm really happy I did. I've been really into it. It's one of those ones where you know, you kind of stay in the car a little longer than you have to. You like to do the dishes and listen at the same time. It's one of those for me. So if you need a change of pace after reading Dance with Dragons, maybe consider checking this out and then seeing the movie afterwards.
Well, as I mentioned, I'm done with the Dark Tower series, so I'm not going to recommend any of the Dark Tower series anymore, although they are all on audiobook, and I listen to them all, and George Guidel and Frank Miller do a fantastic job reading them. I am reading on audiobook Legends, Stories by the Masters of Fantasy, ooh, Volume 1. Now, one of the stories in here is Stephen King.
Tom.
The Little Sisters of Illyria in the Dark Tower universe. But it's not the only story in there.
I think I need to have an intervention for you.
But I swear, after this I'm done. I promise.
It's my last hit, I swear.
Just one more, please. Just a little Roland.
All right. If you say so. I guess I can trust you a little bit. But anyway, so yeah, definitely good picks. I also mentioned on Texilla this week that Texilla, by the way, is the tech help and how-to show that I do for my real job.
With Patrick Norton.
And there's a ton of Doctor Who stuff on Audible. I don't know if you knew this, but some of it's even read by David Tennant. So if you want an extra little Doctor Who fix in your day,
there is no reason not to go to audiblepodcast.com/sword and get a free audiobook. Unless you're already an Audible customer. And if you are,
recommend it to a friend.
Tell your friends, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword and they can get a free audiobook.
Very, very cool. All right. Well, now it is time for Barrier Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. Now, the first one I picked today is kind of related to A Dance with Dragons, and it's a thread started by Adam, and he says, "Hello, gang. I am working on cooking all of the dishes mentioned in A Song of Ice and Fire, and I would appreciate you taking a look. Let me know what you'd like to see next." And then he has a link to his site, cookingiceandfire.com. And this is so amazing.
Apparently, what an awesome project.
Yeah, he even got a write-up in Serious Eats this week, so it's getting some attention. The top post right now is veal cutlets blanched with almond milk. And so what he does is he says where the passage comes from. So this one's from A Dance with Dragons. And the quote is, "The serving men brought out a heron stuffed with figs, veal cutlets blanched with almond milk." And so that's what he's making. So he's probably going to do the heron stuff with figs at some point, if he can get his hands on a heron. I don't know where he's going to find that. But it's great. He's got a few dishes up there already. He makes them with his kids. He lists out all the ingredients that you need and the directions. And it's such a fun project. What a great like theme party kind of thing.
I liked his post about whether he was going to use sugar or not. Because sugar was not widely known in the medieval Europe, and he's kind of using medieval Europe as his guideline to what would have been available in Westeros in the time of A Song of Ice and Fire. So he decided that he would use sugar, but sparingly and only where appropriate, as if it were sort of a rare substance. And I think that's a good way to approach it. He says, George R. R. Martin does mention this stuff in the spun sugar skulls served in Dorne.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
So at least, you know, in canon, he's got some backing for it.
Sugar has been mentioned. Yes.
He could use honey.
He could.
Cause honey is often used as a sweetener in place of sugar, and honey's mentioned all over the place.
Yeah. In fact, in his post for Buttered Parsnips, the line that it comes from A Dance with Dragons is, "Then came quails and honey, a saddle of lamb, goose livers drowned in wine, buttered parsnips, and a suckling pig." I really want him to do the suckling pig.
I know, right?
Oh, it's going to be so cool.
And who was it? Wait a minute. Where's the one about the milk of the poppy?
Oh, that was on my Google Plus post.
Oh, okay.
Someone I posted on Google Plus, and Adam, one of the readers, said, "I want to try me some milk of the puppy." And then he goes, "Oh, wait, that's poppy, isn't it?"
I am the king of the typos, and so I love a hilarious typo because I've committed so many myself. Mm-hmm. No, milk of the pup, poor puppy.
Oh, that's terrible. Poor damn puppy. But yeah, great project, Adam. I think it's really fantastic. I can't wait to see what you're going to come up with next. Well, in sad news, in our TV and movies category, a great show has been canceled. This is a thread started from Andy. And as a lot of you out there already know, Eureka has gotten the axe.
Now, what's saddest about that is not that it's, you know, cut down in its prime or anything. It's actually in, I think, season 5. Mm-hmm. They have some weird way of counting some of the seasons that are 3.5 because they don't show them all at the same time. But it's been around for a while, and it's had a good run, and they're giving them a whole nother season next year to finish up. So it's not being, you know, like Caprica, where they're just like, "That's it, we're pulling the plug." But this year, it's become such a geek fest. Mm-hmm. They have Felicia Day as a regular character. She's like part of the cast. And Will Wheaton is also playing a recurring character. They've started throwing in a lot more references to geek culture. and online stuff than they have in the past. I think they're really doing a great job of bringing in our little corner of the world into the show.
Well, unfortunately, everyone thinks sci-fi are giant a-holes. I made a post about this great web series that's sponsored by sci-fi called The Mercury Men, and I posted about it on Google+, and people just tore into me, saying, like, how could you support sci-fi? Like, I turned my back on them years ago. You know, all they do is cancel good things. And I'm like, I understand that it hurts when a show you like gets canceled, but at the same time, I really want to support, like, content creators and, like, the people who are trying to get their stuff out there and trying to get attention. So it's like, it's a double-edged sword, you know? Like, I can understand not wanting to support a network that has basically foobarred everything you love and all the good shows that have been on there for a long time. But at the same time, the only way you're ever going to get good content is by taking a chance on new things. And as long as they keep doing that, that's a good thing in my book. So it's kind of hard to balance it.
I'm particularly sensitive. I follow the guy. Well, I follow the sci-fi Twitter account, and the guy who runs it tries to be very responsive and tries to address these complaints and concerns quite often. And I remember doing the same thing when I was in charge of the website for Tech TV and trying to explain to people why their favorite bit was changing or a time showtime was moving, and everybody wants things to be exactly the way they want them to be. And I'm not saying that sci-fi hasn't made some dumb moves, especially getting wrestling and really green lighting a bunch of shows that have nothing to do with sci-fi. And I hate that trend of taking a brand and then broadening it out to the point where it's not even recognizable as what it launched at, you know, to the point where they change the name sometimes. Sci-fi changing their name from SCI to SY. So silly. I know they're trying to say, well, we can't trademark the name sci-fi because of science fiction being a generic category. I understand all that. So I feel your pain, and I agree with the criticisms of the stupid things that sci-fi does, but I don't stand on principle and not watch them because they've made dumb moves. I just don't support those dumb moves. I don't watch the wrestling, and I do watch the things that I want to succeed. It's funny to me when people say, well, they've canceled so many good shows. It's because they've also given shows a chance that may not have ever had a chance on any other network. So to me, the response to the stupid things they do is to support them when they do the good things.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you there. But let's talk about happier things, which is awesome shows getting more attention and more casting. And we've got 6 more characters for Game of Thrones. What do you think they're going to do with the name? Do you think they're going to do like Game of Thrones : then the next book?
I think they're just going to call it Game of Thrones.
Forever.
All the way. It's Game of Thrones season 2. You know, and
yeah,
in some ways,
right.
I wish they would have called the series A Song of Ice and Fire because of that.
That's a terrible name, though.
It really, for a TV show, it's
it
not,
really is not yeah, a very good
it's
name.
It's not going to bring people in. Game of Thrones, and people colloquially refer to it as the Game of Thrones series. And of course, then snotty people like us correct them. It's actually A Song of Ice and Fire.
No, you know what? I started calling it Game of Thrones, and people have been snottily correcting me.
Yeah.
Me of all people.
I know, exactly. So, I mean, I think it's okay to call it Game of Thrones. All the way through.
All right. Well, anyway,
Roy Dotrice, who has read most of the audiobooks of the Song of Ice and Fire Game of Thrones series, is going to be
he was going to be cast.
Going to be cast as Grandmaster Pycelle, but he is now going to be cast because he wasn't able to do that. He is going to be cast as the Pyromancer.
Yeah, I am bummed about that.
Halline, the head of the Guild of Alchemists.
Yeah. Okay. I don't remember. It's kind of a bit part.
Yeah, it is. That's what's sad is like Grandmaster Pycelle, not that he's in it forever, but he is a, you know, recurring character and has a bigger part. Halline, the Pyromancer. And maybe that's it. Maybe Roy Dotrice is like, you know what? I just can't commit to something like Pycelle.
Totally. And Julian Glover is going to play Pycelle now. Or did play Pycelle.
Yeah.
And then we've got Hannah Murray. She's a British actress, and she's going to play Gilly.
I always pronounced it Gilly.
Is it Gilly or Gilly?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't listen to the audiobook, so maybe someone else can tell us.
But she's the daughter of Craster, you know, that old crotchety weird guy that only has women living with him.
With all the wives and the daughters and the daughter wives. Oh, spoiler.
slight spoiler.
He has also been cast. Welsh actor Robert
Pugh
is playing him.
Pugh.
They're going to have to dirty him up a bit, as with everyone on the show.
And then here's the controversial one. Carl Davies cast in the role of Alton Lannister.
The who now?
Alton Lannister, you say? This appears to be a new role. This is typical in television shows to collapse several characters into one to make it easier to write and easier to cast. So the speculation from the Wart Zone is that this is probably the character of Cleos Fry and maybe a few other characters smashed into one.
A couple of Lannisters mixed in there.
Yeah, an order of fries with a side of Lannister.
And then we've got Ben Crompton. He's going to be playing Dolorous Ed Tullet.
Dolorous Ed.
Of course, who is a member of the Night's Watch. And he's hilarious, and so I can't wait to see him in person. And then we've got Michael
McElhattan.
All these British and Welsh names are just
Michael
really hard.
McElhattan from Edinburgh. He's probably not from Edinburgh. He'll play Roose Bolton. And wow, I was not familiar with McElhattan. He's apparently been in Mystery, Zen, and Your Bad Self, which I have not watched. But the picture they have on here
freaking looks like a
Roose Bolton.
He is freaking me out.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is creepy.
He looks like he would carry a sigil with a flayed man. Just saying.
So some good casting. I'm excited. I'm getting ever more excited for the next season. And then we have a thread over here on the TV and movies area from Alden O'Neill. And he's talking about the rise of the Planet of the Apes, which I did not see yet, and I probably will not. Did you see it?
I saw it and I liked it.
You liked it.
Alden said he liked the film, but he really wanted to see it taken places just after this one's final shot, where the apes begin throwing spears, not just at the hoods of people's cars, but through people's chests.
All right, so that was a spoiler.
Well, not really. I mean, it's Planet of the Apes. You know the apes are going to start doing something at some point. So that really doesn't spoil anything in the movie, other than the fact that the apes start battling, which if you saw the first movie, you already know. And actually, if you've been alive and heard Planet of the Apes discussed, I think you'd probably have guessed. Anyway, he thought it was underserved by the PG-13 rating. That's the point.
Ah, gotcha.
He just wanted it to be bloodier, I guess, or more animalistic, maybe. Not just bloodier makes it sound like he just wants it to be like an action movie. What I took from what he wrote was like he wanted it to be more visceral. More impalement and tearing apart of limbs.
Oh, God, that's terrible. Well, I'll probably see it at some point, actually. If you give it a pretty decent rating, then
you know,
I'll
I went in with very little expectation and I was floored. I thought they told the story very well. I thought the CG was done much better than I expected because they CG a lot of the apes, in fact, all the apes. Mm-hmm. The geography of San Francisco is mangled. But if you don't live in San Francisco, that's not going to bother you in the least little bit. It's a good story.
Cool. So. And now that you tell me it's in San Francisco, that does make me a little more curious to see how they did it.
Yeah.
So I'll have to check that out.
They go past your house, I think. No,
yeah. All right. And then we got an email. We got this email from Rick Parker. It's a very long email, so I'll try to maybe condense it a little bit. He says that he would like to urge me to listen to Little Fuzzy with an open mind.
Are you not listening to Little Fuzzy with an open mind, Veronica?
Excuse me. I'm allergic to misogyny. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh!
Not from you, Eric. I'm talking about Little Fuzzy.
Okay, then.
He says, the story is neither misogynistic, oh, thank God, nor racist, and I think that you might find it delightful. Piper's work, like that of Asimov and Heinlein, is a product of the 60s. The characters smoke and drink martinis. True, there aren't many female leading characters. The lead female character is named Ruth, and she is no secretary. She's a powerful lawyer and central to the plot. For the early 1960s, I'd say this was fairly progressive. The cast of human characters is also fairly diverse racially and culturally. Piper envisioned a universe that was not America-centric, and numerous characters have Muslim or Hindi names, or were the products of interracial marriage. By the standards of the day, this would be considered very progressive.
Yeah, I think a lot of people may not realize Piper wrote Little Fuzzy and John Scalzi wrote Fuzzy Nation. So you've got two different authors and in two different times, right?
Yes, yes. And so he goes on to talk more about it, which is really great. We'll put the full email in the show notes. But he also said, side note, you'll remember that during the live interview with David Gerrold at Dragon Con last year, he mentioned that he originally called his creatures Fuzzies, but had to change the name to Tribbles because of the H-Beam Piper novel. Also, much of Piper's work is available for free as it has slipped into the public domain. Anyway, I had to speak up for one of my very favorite authors. Thanks for the awesome podcast. I hope to see you guys again at Dragon Con this year, and you will.
Yes, we will be there.
Yes, not only will we be there, we are going to do a live show, and we are also going to be presenting a Parsec Award.
I know. We get to be like, you know, the two stiff people at the Oscars. That's right, Veronica. Because what would science fiction be without aliens? I don't know if that's how it'll work.
So if you're going to be at Dragon Con, the ceremony for the Parsec Awards is going to take place on Saturday, September 3rd from 4 to 6:30 p.m. in the Hyatt Regency 5, Hyatt Regency V at Dragon Con. So we'll be there. We'll be there giving an award, not taking an award this year. I think maybe we have to nominate ourselves. And I don't think we did that.
Well, no, we got nominated by people in the past. So, yeah, you know, wow. I'm really, you know, whatever. That's
next
fine.
Year, we're humble.
Sword and Laser itself will be on Saturday at 1 p.m. in the Marriott Room A601 602.
Yes, it will. And we're going to have, we're going to be having an interview with, what was the name of our interview? He's a
oh, did we get
Robert
it?
J. Sawyer. Yes, we did get it.
Oh, sweet.
And he's a Hugo winner many times over, I believe. And so we're excited to talk to him. Robert J. Sawyer will be our guest at Live Sword and Laser this year.
Yay. All right. Is it time now to say new member hellos?
It is. Should we do one after another?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I'll start. We've got hello to Colleen.
Hello, Josh.
Nathaniel.
Hello, Dave.
AJ.
Steve.
Mark.
Rasputin.
Ryan.
Keith.
Emma.
Doug.
Otto.
Lou.
TK Kenyon.
Sam.
Jonathan.
Sumin.
Hector.
Lori.
Kevin.
Robert.
And Eleanor.
Welcome to the club.
Welcome to the club. Welcome to the forums. And welcome to the show. So that's all we have for the regular show today. If you want to stick around, we're going to be talking A Dance with Dragons. We're already running pretty long. So I don't know. Maybe it might have to bleed into the next episode too. But yeah, if you want to check out the website, it is swordandlaser.com. The email, as always, is theswordandlaser@gmail.com. And all our discussion is happening over on Goodreads. We will see you guys next time.
Unless you're staying for the after hours.
All right, it's time for the after hours. The after.
Grab a drink.
30
pull up
minutes.
To bar. Maybe get yourself some mead.
Mead. Cook up some veal or some parsnips.
Or toss yourself back a dose of the old milk of the puppy.
Milk of the puppy. All right, so one thing you said to me, you finished first, and you said that I was going to be upset by the ending. I wasn't.
Okay.
Why did you think I was? What did you think I was going to react to?
I thought you would react, and maybe I'm just projecting because I reacted a little bit this way. That when you get to the ending, you are left hanging out on a cliff by both Daenerys and Jon Snow. And particularly Daenerys, where
particularly,
finally, huh?
Really, you think I was definitely more hanging on to what happened to Jon.
Well, John felt more like, I've been here before. He's done this to me. I know, you know, and we have a thread going on Goodreads about this. I know that John isn't dead, and I know that he's not going to die. Mm-hmm. I feel very secure in that. The question is, what's going to happen to John? I mean, John is like Bran or Arya or all these other characters where, you know, you think, or even Davos Seaworth, actually, somebody pointed out on Goodreads, you think they're dead. Or you hear that they're dead, and then it turns out they're not dead.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is with Jon Snow, even less. Like, he's being stabbed, but you've got a lot of ways you can go. Some people think Melisandre will revive him, which is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think he'll become, like, Cold Hands, which I don't think they're going to go that direction with him.
Okay.
I think The wildlings will grab him, defend him, and he'll go off with them. He'll be expelled by the Night's Watch, and he'll now have the freedom to do all these things that he's been holding himself back from. And I don't know which way he's going to march. Is he going to go north? Is he going to go south? I don't know. But he is going to become more than he could be as Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. So I think it opens up his character. I'm not too worried about him. Daenerys, on the other hand, I just was frustrated with the whole damn book. Like, get off your black ebony bench and do something, for God's sakes. You know, you're treating your dragons like crap. They've been with you this whole time. And then finally, at the very end, she's riding her dragon. She's done her last stupid walk and realizes, no, okay, I can do this. And she hops on your dragon. And that's it. It's like, I've been waiting from this since page one, and this is all I get is at the very end.
What is wrong with the end? I mean, she meets up with the other Khalasar.
The problem with the end is that it ended.
Well,
it's
yeah.
Like, now we're going. Now Daenerys is going to start kicking some ass. Like, I've been waiting for this. I guess I'll wait.
Well, apparently this was the book of Daenerys setting up herself for coming back to kick some ass later.
If I didn't have to wait for the next book, I wouldn't have been frustrated.
It's
only that I was like, finally, this is what I've been dying for. I've been dying for her to just get over herself and start kicking some ass. And then the book ended.
Well, let's talk more about John, because I agree with you that he's not dead. There's no way he's dead. I mean, I know we say time and time again that George R. R. Martin is capable of killing off your favorite characters at any point in time.
That's why I'm only mostly sure, not entirely sure.
Right. But actually, so I think John has the ability to, now that he has been freed from the Night's Watch, which I believe will happen, he could still come back to be the 1,000th Night Commander. Because wasn't that part of like his prophecy?
Oh, really? You think he could, that would count twice?
I think it's possible that he could come back again as Night Commander later down the line.
I hadn't thought about that. That's interesting.
But let's go through this thread. It's called About Jon Snow, and it's in the Sword and Laser discussion area, and it's started by Sauron. And he says, some thoughts on that one chapter. You know the one. He says, it seems unlikely that Jon is dead. He was stabbed in the midst of wildlings, and it seems unlikely they would take kindly to the betrayal. He was stabbed, but not killed, and I do not doubt that Melisandre can heal him. I expect that what happened after his chapter ended was a fight between the wildlings, the Queen's Men, and the traitorous Watch.
Yeah, I'm with that.
I also thought the note about Bowen Marsh crying as he attacked Jon Snow was a really nice touch. I wonder if Bowen, despite not liking Jon's ideas, hoped Jon was making the right decisions. Then when Jon appears to be gathering wildlings to attack Winterfell, what would you think in Marsh's shoes? Probably that Jon was about to betray you and all men. I also doubt Stannis is really dead. In Bolton's note, he says that he wants Reek and his bride back, but they are, as you know, with Stannis. It seems unlikely they left on their own, though it is possible. My suspicion is that Bolton did capture Mance and was bluffing about victory to cow Jon into accepting his terms. Yes, obviously. I'm pretty sure that is also the case.
No, that's another Davos Seaworth thing, where you like, oh, Davos Seaworth got his head cut off. And you're like, what? But he's in this other chapter over here. Mm-hmm. And then you find out, oh, that was the story put about. So, yeah, I think that's just Roose Bolton bluffing. Absolutely.
And then Kevin says Jon Snow is dead. He was being too Ned Stark, but he will be brought back by Melisandre.
Right.
I agree. It's doubtful George R. R. Martin would have spent so much time developing the character only to kill him off so quickly. I am torn as to what will happen after he is healed. Will he still be Lord Commander, or will his death release him from the Watch, and will he go off to become Lord of Winterfell?
That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. And then he says,
I don't think he's going to die, but I think that's what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. You posted on this thread, too. Stannis is definitely not dead, as Davos was not dead. It's an obvious bluff from Bolton. And there's some interesting theories about Jon being a Targaryen-Stark hybrid, or like what his deal really is. I know we had some rumors on the Asha Greyjoy storyline about what his actual potential, or maybe was it the Davos Seaworth storyline?
Yeah,
it was Davos. He heard about, you know, John, where he actually came from. But I think it's still
a
Rhaegar, Lyanna situation going on here.
It's definitely not Ed's. It's definitely Lyanna's son. Mm-hmm. John is. He's not Ned's son. Rhaegar's a good bet. And it made me think when Kevin posted this, okay, so John could fulfill the prophecy. He could be Azor Ahai reborn. John could also end up marrying Daenerys.
He could. That's always kind of been my thought from the beginning of the series, is that that's what's going to happen. But now we've got
he's
three.
Ice.
All right, well, think of this. We've got three.
She's fire.
We've got three dragons, right?
Oh, right. Yeah.
So potentially we need riders for all three of those dragons.
Mm-hmm.
So Daenerys obviously has got Drogon. And then we've got the other two dragons. So who's going to be the other two people on the dragons? This is totally
Arya.
Like another theory. It could be, maybe it's going to be Arya. Maybe it's going to be Aegon. Maybe it's going to be, maybe it'll be Jon. Maybe
they're not going to have all three get married, are they?
No, and who knows?
I mean, these Targaryens, they do some pretty
they
crazy
like
stuff.
They like to marry their brothers and sisters.
They just like to marry all day long.
And then there was another thread that was going into the idea of, are Jaime, Cersei, and Tyrion all really Tywin's children? Could they potentially be, could Tyrion potentially be a Targaryen?
Wait a minute. Oh, is that, but then why would, okay, given how much Tywin pretty much despised Tyrion and the only reason he treated him with any kind of respect is because he was a Lannister, that just doesn't ring true.
All right, well, let's go with, play with this idea for a second.
Right,
so this thread
right.
was started by Fit and Trim. Nice Fit and Trim.
Nice handle.
It's called Tyrion, Jaime, and Cersei. Before I comment, let's recap in backwards order. In A Dance with Dragons, page 577. Prince Aerys, the Mad King, as a youth, he was taken by a certain lady of Casterly Rock, a cousin of Tywin Lannister. When she and Tywin read, Aerys, the Mad King, drank too much wine at the wedding feast and was heard to say that it was a great pity that the Lord's right to the first knight has been abolished. The liberties that the Mad King took during the betting, that was from Ser Barristan to Dany.
Right.
A Feast for Crows, page 533. The imp is no longer my brother, if he ever was, Cersei Lannister. Page 503. If Tyrion is Tywin's son, not you, I said so once to your father's face, and he would not speak to me for half a year. That's Aunt Jenna to Jaime. Then we've got A Storm of Swords, page 880. You are no son of mine, Tywin's last words spoken to Tyrion. Then page 502. Yeah. Aerys has chosen Jaime, despite his father, to rob Lord Tywin of his heir.
So in other words, Tyrion is a Lannister.
Well, this
but
is
also a Targaryen.
It's either that King Aerys was Tyrion's father or King Aerys was Cersei and Jaime's father based on
I think Aerys makes more sense as Tyrion's father, because you're no son of mine from Tywin.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't only make sense in that way.
It's
you're no son of mine. See, because when I read that you're no son of mine, I was like, oh, he's finally given up. He's finally disowning him in his last. But then put in this context, it sounds more prophetic.
And then Fit and Trim goes on to say, in favor of Tyrion, he's been interested in dragons since he was a child in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Tywin said that he wasn't his son. Tywin was always cruel to Tyrion. Tyrion's hair is closer to Targaryen bleach blonde than Lannister blonde.
Sure.
Tyrion doesn't get the grayscale because, just like Dany, he doesn't get sick.
Right. Boy, that makes a lot of sense. I gotta say, you're starting to win me over here, Fit and Trim.
There's a lot of theories.
There's a lot of evidence behind these theories, and Tyrion, you know, why would the Lannisters suddenly have a dwarf? Whereas a family known for breeding their sisters and brothers together could easily have a dwarf.
So I think it's a kind of clever theory. So I just want to see. And you know, then
do you
there's.
Think, are you saying Tyrion would ride one of the dragons?
Potentially.
Hmm.
I think the whole him not getting sick and not getting the grayscale is like a pretty big red herring.
Yeah, that it probably is.
Maybe.
It goes neither here nor there, but there's all these other, he is different than his brothers and sisters.
But is he different because of the abuse he suffered from being a dwarf?
Well, that's
or is
what
he different
one has
because
always
he's
thought,
different?
But maybe there's more to it than that. And maybe Tywin had such mixed feelings about him because of his heritage. He's part Lannister, part Targaryen. And it wasn't just the fact that he was a dwarf.
Yeah. So he definitely could be at least half Lannister.
Yeah.
So
I have to say, I really liked Tyrion's story in this book. It was really satisfying, really fun, very interesting. And you got some great Tyrion lines and humor in there. So, I don't want to give that short shrift when I was going off about Daenerys and Jon Snow. I didn't love Arya's storyline. It was good, but I think I wanted it to go farther, and this just isn't the book where it goes there. So, you know, I understand why you don't want to force it. But I'm looking forward to hearing more Arya action in the future.
I loved Ser Barristan.
Yeah.
As a point of view character.
Well, and we mentioned this when we saw George R. R. Martin talk. He talked about the knot, the marine knot. He got to a point where he had all these events happening in marine, and he didn't know how to write it from the point of view of the characters he had available. He writes from Daenerys. He writes from Tyrion. He's like, nobody is seeing the things that I need them to see to tell this story. And that's when he finally said, I'm going to give a point of view to Barristan. And I'm so glad he did.
Yeah, I think it's also kind of nice because he's just like almost a purely good character, and we see so little of that.
Right.
It's kind of a nice change for once. Yeah. So I like that a lot. But I think he's made some good decisions. He's kind of done some things that Dany didn't have the stones to do, or she was missing because she flew off on a dragon. So I like that point of view, and I hope he sticks around for a while. I was kind of convinced he was going to get killed off in this book.
I think he's going to stick around. I don't know if we'll ever get another perspective chapter from him. But of course, now that he's broken the seal, he's there for the taking whenever Martin feels like it.
Yeah, that's very true. I was kind of bummed we didn't see anything from Catelyn Stark in this book.
Yeah.
I kind of would have liked to go back to that, but her story had kind of already been told in the last book.
Barely got anything from Jaime either, or Brienne.
Like maybe one chapter, I think, maybe two.
Yeah.
I think it was just the one. Yeah, and Brienne was straight up lying to Jaime in that chapter. I mean, all that didn't fit together because she was supposed to be... She was already sent off on her mission by Lady Stark as zombie Catelyn. to find Sansa, and then the whole storyline there didn't fit together quite right.
No, and that's a, you know, I mean, there was that weirdness where Jon Snow hasn't sent Samwell off yet at the beginning, because we're getting chapters that are supposed to go right along with the previous book, but he separated them out. So I think everything starts to flow together again in the next book, and I hopefully won't have those kinds of weirdnesses anymore.
Yeah. And then do you think that Sir Robert the Strong is somehow the ghost or the zombie of Sandor Clegane?
No, not Sandor, Gregor, right?
Gregor, I'm sorry, the mountain. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally do. I think they did chop off his head too. And I think that the master figured out how to animate the corpse in some weird, freaky way.
So did he have his helm on? Did he? I can't remember. They never saw his face. He never talks.
Yeah, never took his helm off. He never saw his face, and he never talked. So
he took a quote vow of silence, right?
Yeah, maybe he like grafted on the head of something else.
That's gonna be gross. Whatever it is,
or he pulled out his brain.
I felt bad for Quentin Martell in this book. Little frog.
Oh yeah, he got a bad rap.
He got a bad rap, and he tried to be brave.
He wasn't. I mean,
well, he was at the end. He was brave at the end.
He was also a little too brave.
It was actually just a little ill-fated.
Yeah, it was a little stupid.
It was kind of freaking stupid. I'm just gonna walk in the cage with all the dragons, and I'm gonna control them because I'm like 1/16th Targaryen or whatever.
Just goes to show. Don't want to fake your ancestry when you're dealing with dragons.
Well, he wasn't faking his ancestry.
Yeah,
he was just very far removed.
Yeah.
Yeah, not enough. Not enough dragon blood to control them, unfortunately. Or they just weren't having it.
Kind of knew that the first time he got burned. You're like, you're not going to survive this, dude.
And then we had another thread started by Peter that I thought was pretty interesting. He said, I was reading through the Theon chapter, the Arya / Jane Poole wedding, Lord Ramsay.
Oh, right.
And the conversation that he has with Lady Dustin of Barrowtown. It got us got him thinking, what if she's right, Lady Dustin? What if the masters are really the ones pulling the strings, or at least seem to be, and have been for centuries? They know everything that's said, are pretty much given free rein over entire households, are entrusted with writing messages, teaching the children, and are the fastest and easiest communication lines throughout the kingdom. Very few people either notice them or are suspicious of them. If you think about it, the only real groups of people that don't trust him implicitly are the Iron Islands or the Greyjoys, and the East, where, to be fair, there is far less real need for them, and there has been little to no interference from the outside, nor do their movements seem noticed. I can see how the Maesters may have been manipulating everyone and moving events forward, either because they know the prophecies or they have their own agenda and are just power hungry.
I think you're onto something there, Peter, but I'm not sure that it's as widespread as you're suggesting. Just because Master Aemon does not seem to fit this mold, and I don't think he would have gone on the trip with Samwell if he was part of it. Could be wrong, could be being naive here. Samwell definitely is going to find out if that's true. I think a subset of the Masters probably fits exactly what he's talking about.
Well, I think it's really all just varies at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. I think there is a kind of a shadowy group within the Masters that is doing a lot of behind-the-scenes skullduggery, and Varys is definitely in cahoots with them. But I don't think it's limited to just the Masters. I think it's probably some kind of secret society that involves a lot of Masters. But yeah, Varys obviously has been plotting to bring a Targaryen back to the throne for a long time.
What do you think is going to happen with Victarion Greyjoy when he gets to Meereen? With his boats and
slaves? You know, I thought we were going to see that happen. I thought that was part of the convergence of everything in Meereen. I believe he'll swear loyalty to Daenerys, even if she doesn't marry him.
You think so?
Because he wants to turn against his brother, and Daenerys will be able to sweet talk him into trusting her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder what's she needs the boats, and he's got the boats.
I wonder what's going to happen to Theon, because I was glad to see he finally got over his split personality, but he's scarred. Mm-hmm. Reek can come back at any point, and may come back unbidden, and I wouldn't be surprised if some other weird, darker personality arises in him. So his story is going to get a lot more twisted, I think.
Yeah, now that he's back with Asha, that should be interesting as well. I'm glad at least there was that connection, that meeting of people. I mean, I'm sure neither of them are very happy to see the other, perhaps.
And I hope that Martin has a definite ending in mind. He says he does. I have no reason to doubt, because I can see a cataclysmic finale starting to take shape here. You know, Bran is getting ready to come back down from the north. You know, his story was very important, even if there wasn't a lot.
Or is he going to grow into a tree?
Well, when I say he comes back down from the north, he may be flying as a raven, just saying. But he's going to come back into this story. Jon Snow is about to come back into the mainland, I have a feeling. I'm starting to think he's going to march south.
What if he just goes into Ghost?
Well, I hadn't discounted that possibility entirely. But I think Jon Snow as an upright human walking around is too important to this story. Daenerys is finally going to get her boats. Maybe Victarion's the one who gives her the majority of her boats. Mm-hmm. She's going to show up. We already have the other Targaryen who's landed.
Yeah.
So we have got two books off, an epic convergence coming that I wouldn't be surprised if George R. R. Martin is a little shaken in his boots about doing this tale justice, because he has set himself up for an incredible finale.
I think that John is definitely going to take back Winterfell with the Wildings.
Yeah, well, John's coming back. Bran's coming back. Mm-hmm. I think we'll start to see Arya starting to head back. Mm-hmm. You know, it's essentially all of our characters have been dispersed.
Or is Cersei going to go on her money-finding mission to Braavos or Pentos or wherever Arya is right now? And will Arya meet with her there?
Oh, maybe. That's an interesting way to get Arya back. Mm. Cersei goes on the money-finding mission and doesn't recognize Arya. And then Arya... yeah. but the chick... whatever you think, the ravens are coming home to roost.
Oh, yeah. It's, yeah, yeah. It's going to be so good. All right. Well, we have a few more years to wait, so.
I just hope I live long enough to read it all.
I think you will. I just hope George R. R. Martin lives long enough to finish it. So anything else you want to add, or do you feel like we wrapped up all our major points?
No, I really enjoyed, you know, just on an overall note, I really enjoyed the book. I was frustrated that it ended, not because it ended badly, but because it ended and I wanted more. And that's, you know, high praise. I really cannot wait for the next one, but I'll have to.
All right. Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed reading along with us. And if you have any other points to make, we still have the forums open and the discussion is still going strong. So check it out over at Goodreads, or you can find all our discussions at the discussion tab on our website at swordandlaser.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.